This interview episode is brought to you by G-Tops. Why would you want to lose the freedom of the Freedom Tops? Jeep developed the Freedom Top through years of design and testing. Quick on, quick off, no leaking, and easy to store. The unbreakable G-Top panels installed in the Freedom Tops make the cabin quieter, stronger, and lighter. Clear see-through tops with no visual distortion. Some other tops not only distort your view, they act as a drum. That's bass you do not want in your Jeep. Check out G-Tops today at gtops.com. That's G-E-E-T-O-P-S.com. gtops.com. Hi, I'm Tony, and welcome to the Jeep Talk Show, where we talk about all things Jeep, from trail riding to overlanding and everything in between. Every Friday, we have an interview with a new and exciting guest. Sometimes they have products you need for your Jeep. Sometimes they have a great story to share. So sit back, grab a cold one, and get ready for another great guest right here on the Jeep Talk Show.
Are you ready?
It's time for the Jeep Talk Show with hosts Tony, Josh, Wendy, and Chuck. From around the world, or from your city, and sometimes just down the street.
Howdy, neighbor.
It's the Jeep Talk Show interview.
Hi, old boys and girls. It's time for another Jeep Talk Show interview, and tonight we're going to be talking with Steve. I guess actually I'm used to saying that tonight because we've been doing the interviews at nighttime, but this is around the middle of the day. We've changed it up a little bit so that we can get people that actually have jobs in the middle of the day if they want to do it during business hours. So anyway, Steve has been wheeling for decades. He stopped momentarily just so he could talk to us. He started a little lighting company called Rigid Industries, sold it, and is doing it again. I would assume that means that you're doing another company, not sold it twice, because that would be illegal.
Well, it happens quite a bit. You see a lot of people actually buy their old companies back, but no, it's a new lighting company.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that and why you hate Jeeps, because it's only for Toyotas. Steve has raced KOH, King of the Hammers, 5 times. Is that Nora? Is that how you pronounce that? Nora?
Yeah.
3 times. And he just loves just about anything dirt related. So I guess that would be like side-by-sides, motorcycles, anything that touches the dirt.
Yeah, somebody asked me the other day how many tires I have to maintain in my life.
Oh, my God.
Which is a really interesting question, because everybody listening, like, if you're like me, you're a vehicle hoarder, trailer hoarder, and everything else. And I forget the actual number, but it was over 7. And when you think about that, like, oh, God, that's a lot of tires. But, you know, when you start adding in trailers and UTVs and quads and Jeeps and race cars and RVs and everything else, and then, you know, your wife's got to drive something. Mm-hmm. So, you know, 4 tires for her, and then I've got 2 kids that drive. So it's, I spend a lot of time airing up tires.
Well, I mean, you got a business, so let's assume that you can afford the tires. There's that whole thing about you just bought some tires, but what was it for? What's the size and what's the diameter and all the rest of that stuff? So yeah, I can quite understand that it would be a nightmare, even if you could afford a bunch of tires.
Yeah, it's time consuming, but you know, everything that has tires on it's fun. You know,
I mean, oh, I know. Well, until it breaks or pisses you off.
It does, or explodes rolling down the freeway. But no, tires, you know, tires are fun. It's it doesn't matter if it's a dirt bike or a quad or a race car. I mean, I don't have too many. One thing I never really got into was like SCCAs, you know, on-road racing. But, you know, it's fun. Driving's fun. Operating machines is fun.
Tire day is always exciting for me. You know, when you get rid of the stock tires and you're getting something that's a little larger, maybe it's got some mud lugs on it for maximum traction, and it just changes the whole look and feel of the vehicle.
Oh, it does. And it's such a progress, because you get something, you know, it's the stages of ownership, you know. You get something, and I mean, nowadays most stuff comes with, I mean, most Jeeps are coming with 33s on it, but, you know.
No, that's amazing, too. Ago, yeah.
33s are awesome. Like, it was so exciting to get 33s. But, you know, now then you go to the 35s. They're like, oh, you know, you run those for a year or two. Then the 35s aren't, you know, all your buddies get 37s.
Those bastards.
Before you know it, you're running something with sticky 42s on it, and you know, you want to talk expensive rubber. But you know, it's, if you're running something with sticky 42s on it, it's probably fun, and you're probably having a lot of fun where you go with it.
Oh yeah, you know it. So you happen to mention Jeep in there, and of course I was doing the why do you hate Jeep things just to wind you up. You, even though and we're going to get into this more here in a bit, the Nacho Love, and that's the name of the new company, right?
It is Nacho Off Road Lighting, Nacho LED.
That's a great name.
we want to, you know, I mean, we got back into it because we love it. We mm-hmm. got back into it because we're, you know, there's a core group of us that we're all rigid guys, and we all scattered to the wind, and we all were doing other stuff for years. And it was like, God, we're not really done. There was stuff we wanted to finish. There was stuff we wanted to do. I want to put lights on my, you know, some of those 70 tires that I'm proud of. I want to design my own stuff. I want the best stuff in the world. But if we're going to do this, you know, we had a that was the beginning, and we wanted to make sure we had fun doing it. And the best way to do it is just to name your company Nacho, because everybody loves Nacho.
Exactly. You know?
And
so why did you go to Nacho? I mean, I see on your website at Nacho Offroad, is that Technologies, right? Offroadtechnology.com. Yep. I actually got it wrong in the show notes here, so I want to make sure people. I like to start with that, so that when people are listening to the interview, they can actually go over there and peruse the website. Yeah, NachoOffroadTechnology.com. So on your main page, I see a bunch of Toyotas. Is that the reason for the Nacho? Is there a Nacho connection between it and the taco? So the taco would be the thing I was telling you before we started. I like Taco Love. So if it was,
I get it.
It would be more of a Toyota thing if it was a Taco Love.
No, and we actually work with a bunch of the Tacoma guys, Taco Love and Takamoto. I mean, there's, you know, the guys that do all the taco stuff. But no, it is purely, you know, we're Southwest based. There's a lot of Mexico racing references in our industry. And we wanted to get away from that and just have something fun. I mean, you know, we're in Arizona, you know, just naturally between family vacations and wheeling and racing trips. I mean, I'd say on average, I probably spend 3 weeks a year, 3 to 4 weeks a year in Mexico, which, you know, is kind of a lot. I mean, you figure 8 to 10% of my year is spent in Mexico. And nachos are my favorite food. I mean, I've always loved nachos. I mean, my friends always make fun of it because, you know, we'll go to a nice restaurant. Oh man, if they got nachos on the menu, I'm gonna order the nachos.
Oh, nachos are great. It's like a snack food. My wife and I love having breakfast for dinner, so it's kind of the same thing. It's something that's unusual, but it's tasty and it's good anytime. Hell, I'll have nachos for breakfast.
I mean, I would imagine my cardiologist probably doesn't appreciate my love of nachos, but you know, I try to exercise so I can eat a lot of nachos.
Well, you exercise by changing tires and just doing tire inventory. All right, so let's talk about rigid industry. I think everybody's heard of rigid industry. So, and I guess one of the questions I want to ask is, whenever you sold Rigid Industries, was there any kind of agreement that you couldn't do a competing company? I mean, aren't you a competing company now?
Any kind of sellout, any kind of buyout is going to have a non-compete. And honestly, ours were expired before we even thought about getting back into it.
Okay.
I mean, I stayed on great. Like I said, there's nothing nasty about the split up. None of us left saying, oh, we're going to do this again. It was all very good. I mean, Rigid was a title sponsor of my race car for a couple of years. So it's not like, you know, it's just, you know, they kept going a direction. And after a while, like, well, there's still stuff I wanted to do. It had nothing to do with, I want to, you know, screw Rigid. I mean, I still love Rigid. I mean, if you don't buy Nacho, buy Rigid. I mean, I still think they make some of the best lights on the market. I just want, you know, there's a difference between a big, massive company that has 50% of market share and a small, you know, fast-moving, high-technology, creative company is what we're doing.
God, I would imagine the meetings alone are horrible. It's something you have to do as a big company, but it doesn't. It's not as nimble at getting things done and having that feeling of, oh, this, I've created this. This is cool. And you correct me on this. I'm just guessing.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, everything. It's hard to run a. It's hard to keep the startup mentality by committing. You know, everybody. You know, you go. You, in MBA classes, you know, startup mentality, nimbleness, you know, quickness, all this stuff. But at the end of the day, you can't do that by committee. You know, you got to have, and you can't do it unless you're an enthusiast in a market like this. Mm-hmm. And that was the other big thing is there's really four of us that got back in and started Nacho. Every one of us is an off-roader at heart. And that's the thing is we're out using this stuff every weekend, you know, and we wanted this. We wanted stuff that we would be, that we wanted to build what we wanted, not necessarily what a committee or a market study or something's telling us, you know. Or, hell, we're not even building maybe what's going to sell the best. We're building what we think is going to be the best product for the market. And if we do our job right, if we do that correctly, then it will sell itself. But rather than looking at, you know, we wanted to build a company around intuition and enthusiasm rather than market studies and potential sales numbers. Now, of course, you got to look at that stuff. I mean, right. The purpose of a business is to make money. So we have to be a viable business, but your priorities can be in different places.
Yeah. You may not know, you've only seen a couple of episodes. I am a huge Light fan, and I've been a Light fan since I was like 12 or something. Bright flashlights, bright lights. I think at one point on my 1998 XJ, I had over 100,000 lumens that bolted onto the front of that. I guess I still do. It just, I'm driving the Gladiator now, and I've not put as many lights on it, but there's some lights on it. So I just love lights. I love LEDs. I love them bright. And yes, I like to be able to see a raccoon's asshole at 3 miles down the road. So lights are just great. And people, you know, the lights before lockers and things, it's like you may not need the lockers if you were able to see where you were going. That's the way I tell them.
Yeah. I mean, we still joke about that. I mean, we'll do. I think I just saw a post. I think we reshared, but somebody posted lights for lockers with a bunch of nachos. And, you know, I love it just because, hey, if we can generate that enthusiasm about lighting. And that was where Rigid did so amazing, is we created a market. I mean, the market for lighting really didn't exist before the LEDs. I mean, there were some HIDs, there were some, you know, the KC highlighters, but it wasn't considered an essential part of a vehicle.
Right.
And the LED light bar and the branding really got people realizing the benefits of having good lights. Like, you don't, you know, now lights aren't just a little bit extra if you need to get back to your camp at night. Now it's like, hey, let's go on a night ride. And growing up out here in the desert, we were doing that anyway. So it was kind of, you know, that's kind of how I got into lighting.
It's a totally different world wheeling at night. I mean, even if you did the same trail during the day, at night it's completely different.
Yep. And it doesn't matter if you're dunes or mud or winter wheeling or what. I mean, night is, it's like two completely different hobbies, you know. And we went to the dunes last weekend, and it's always funny when, you know, you're going out for a night ride and everybody lines up at camp and everybody just kind of looks around and kind of just waits for me to be the leader because I got a light.
They can depend on you to light the trail. I just like the lights because of what, like I was telling you, I just have a weird fetish for really bright lights. It dawned on me later after I was blinding the hell out of somebody. The leader is really the one that needs the lights, and everybody else, you need lights, but you don't want the blinding lights that you're knocking down the vision of the leader. So,
exactly.
I think you still need them because if you get, go off on your own, or maybe you have a break that you need to go back to the to home, basically, on the trail, you need those lights so you can get back. So lights is something I think everybody should have.
Yeah, and it's funny, you know, a quick little plug for our technology.
Sure.
Every light we sell has multiple modes, and every light also has a low mode in it, because you get in a line, you get in a group ride, and the worst thing you can have is all your lights from the dude behind you blinding you. You got to move all your mirrors out so you can't see, and then you can't see anything. So, and that's what we say, it's your trail light. It's a little bit brighter than your high beams, but it's a fifth of the power of the high beam, because lights need to be adaptable for a situation. And how often are you on the trail and the situation is there's somebody in front of you and you don't need 100,000 lumens. So rather than, you know, put a small set of lights and a big set of lights, it's all one. And that was one of the things that we understand as enthusiasts is, look, you don't need 100,000 lumens all the time. But you need floodlights, you need wide beam lights, you need lights tilted down, you need low beam lights almost all the time if you're driving at night. So let's build something that might not be as exciting. Maybe doesn't, like, you don't get the wow factor when you go out, oh my God, but it's more usable for real world situations. But then you still have that, whoa, when you put the fixed way.
Right.
So that's, you know, that's kind of what we've designing around is what we would want. What do I want on my own vehicle?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, design something that you want, and hopefully people will agree with you. And if they don't, you still have something that you like. So let me ask you about this. You mentioned a couple of times about you guys still wanted to you had some ideas that you didn't do whenever you owned Rigid. What was it that you came out? Was it the dimmable lights that you're talking about? Or what was it that you guys did differently?
Multi-beam lights, you know, where you've got a drive beam or a flood beam and a spot beam all in one. You know, we've got a cool feature and new lights coming out where the backlight turns into a wide area floodlight. I mean, we can talk about it because it's all patented. We just haven't released the product yet.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of this stuff, and it all comes down to when we're sitting around here and we're saying, oh, that would be really cool. We're saying that from a spot of, I want that on my own stuff.
Exactly.
Versus, oh, I think that would sell good. It's us. If I'm a very, very typical customer, if I build what I want, knowing what technology is available and bring that to market, then it's fun. I love the product development cycle. And when I say, so back to your question, we weren't, you know, there's still stuff we wanted to do. It wasn't necessarily a specific feature. It was just, I love the product development. I love the inception of technology and creating something new. And like you said, you love the lights. Lights is such an instant gratification technology. It's not like suspension or armor or something like that where, you know, you can build it right, but you really hope you don't ever have to use it or,
right.
You know, you got to go find the perfect situation. We can build a light, walk out in the parking lot, turn it on. Everybody's excited. Yes.
Oh, there's
cool.
Nothing that screams off-road or modifications like lights. You see them when they're not on, and you especially see them when they are on. And there's one thing, because people give me a hard time all the time about all the lights and stuff and my light fetish. I remind them, being down here on the southeast coast of Texas, we get tropical disturbances and hurricanes and stuff. And you may not need those lights off-road as much as you need them on road after a tropical with the water, and if it's severe enough, telephone poles, trees, and being able to see those things is really important. So the lights aren't just for off road. Flatly, they're for you to be able to see what's in front of you or behind you or on the side of where you are. So
yeah.
I think that lights are very important. They're fun, but I think lights, additional lights are very important.
Yeah. And usable light. And that's the thing is you need different light for every situation you're in. One light isn't going to do everything.
Right.
And, you know, you could try doing combo beams, you know, hybrid stuff that has, you know, a little of everything. But no matter what, as long as you have that pencil beam, as long as you have that fireball out there, that's what your eyes are going to dilate to. So you really need to be able to turn down the intensity for a lot of situations. You know, a true pencil spot beam, while it's fun on paper, it's fun to look at, it's fun to research, is not useful for 90% of what you need.
Right.
And that's where, you know, again, I'm not done, you know, there's still stuff I want to do. And that I want to teach the industry about what appropriate lighting is for appropriate situation and break the narrative that, you know, farthest is best, brightest is best. Absolutely not. It's not the best. And there's so many situations where a wide floodlight is the best. But nobody's going to buy that as a standalone product because it's not fun. It doesn't impress anybody when you go show off your lights. So if we could do that with this, now you've got something that's really cool because that is the most versatile product in the world. And I mean, we have patents on automated, you know, automatic tuning where it changes beams based on speed and everything. But at the end of the day, off-roading is controlling a machine for a specific environment. And it's a problem-solving exercise where you're getting through something that a vehicle probably shouldn't get through. So why would we turn over control of our lights or anything when we're out there to have fun operating this machinery. So that's where we just say, hey, look, it does all this stuff, full control over it, flip different switches, and you can have whatever. And that it's because it's a hobby, you know. You should be able to pick what you want when you want.
Mm-hmm. Well, how you decide how to build your rig, whatever it is, it could be a life-saving vehicle. Depending on what's going on, it could be a life-saving vehicle. So do you really want to listen to people that talk about lights before lockers and giving you a hard time? Or do you want to do what you think is best for your rig? And I think that's an important thing because it's not just all fun and games. You can, these things are specialty instruments that can get you into trouble, but learning how to use them can get you out of trouble.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't know what you're going to need your lights for.
Right.
You know, that's, you should have everything for everything. You know, there is that, I think it was a meme or, you know, maybe COVID or back when, you know, it seemed like the world was ending.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was always the joke that the off-roaders were, you know, like, all right, here we go.
It's time.
Yeah, we're ready for this.
I was born for this.
Yeah.
So let me,
the same thing.
So let me ask you about the light color, because I think a lot of people make the mistake of thinking that they need that pure white, and sometimes even blue-ish light. I've found and read that that's not the best color for necessarily for off-road lights.
You know, so the way LEDs are made, 6,000 Kelvin, which is a pretty cool white. I mean, it's not blue, but it is a very, very pure white, we'll say.
Right.
Is the brightest you're going to get. Because the way LEDs are made, it all starts with a blue LED and then you convert it over to white light. So, I'm just getting a little nerdy, but
that's interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah. So, every white LED starts with a blue. And you've all seen the little yellow, you know, the little yellow chips inside your light. Well, if you go scrape off that yellow, it's a blue LED in it. So you actually have a blue chip, and then that projects blue light into the phosphor, and then the phosphor is the white.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the problem is the farther you get away from blue, the less output you get. So if you go with like a warm white, a 3,000 Kelvin or 4,000 Kelvin, then you're going to give up 20-30% of your light.
Interesting.
So then on top of that, so that's one consideration. The other consideration is what your eye can see. Your eye can see best at daylight. Daylight is 4,700 Kelvin, more so natural white. The 6,500 is kind of considered the top, but everything down from there just gets warmer all the way down to, like an amber is going to be about a 2,000 Kelvin.
Okay.
So we build our lights at 5,700. And that is because we think it's a good compromise between what your eye can perceive, and it's still right on the bell curve of eye sensitivity, but it's still bright enough that you get more output. When you start getting down towards the 5,000, 4,500, you start giving up a noticeable amount of light for every watt that goes into your fixture.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is just.
So do you find that you can, do you find you can see things better off-road with a, maybe it's a white LED, but it has a yellow covering over it? I've noticed I get a little bit more of a 3D effect, especially if it's down low. Maybe it's the down low that makes the difference. But I get more of a 3D effect for like rocks and things at amber.
Amber and yellow should only be used if it's got low visibility, if there's something suspended in the air, smoke, fog, dust, whatever. The yellow, honestly, is a look. Most people love the look of it. I'm not going to argue that. I mean, yeah, your vehicle is an extension of your personality.
Mm-hmm.
But if you like the amber, by all means, use the amber. Your eye is most sensitive at about 5,000 Kelvin. So that is where you're going to see and perceive the most detail, and you're going to get the most feedback from whatever you're looking at. What this gets back to my original point of making a light that's right for the situation. When you use the amber, what you're seeing is just your eye perceiving things differently because you dim down the light. And when you dim down the light, you can see stuff better, because you're not focused on that one bright spot.
Right.
When your eyes dilate, you can see more of your surrounding. You see that 3D effect you're talking about. You're not seeing stuff better. You're seeing more of it because the amber covers dim the light stick. Now, if you like the look of it, if you like the look on your vehicle, by all means, I don't want to tell people how to make their vehicles look. We just want to give you the tools. But if you could take the white light and convert it into a flood or convert it into an area light, you're going to get the same effect because now you're lighting up a broader area at a lower intensity, but you're doing it at the wavelength that your eyes perceive better. Mm-hmm. So I know we just went down a little bit of a rabbit hole, but
that's good stuff.
That's the idea of, you know, white, amber, and the color of white.
So based on what you've told me, I think this would be a no. But have you done or have you considered doing anything that you can change the angstrom level, the change it from 6,000 to 4,700 variably?
We've got it.
Okay.
We've already got that. Yeah, that was one of the things we released is we've actually got a light that has and that's part of our patents. Is so you've got half the light is amber, half the light is white. But electronically, we can go full power white, full power amber, or you can go full power mixed, and it makes a really, really nice warm white. So you've got a 5,700 Kelvin full power beam, then you've got a 2,000 Kelvin full beam, or you can go back and do like a 3,500 Kelvin full beam. And it doesn't necessarily have a low beam in it, but you can really dial in color temperature. Mm-hmm. And we say, like, you know, you're driving up to the mountains and you leave Denver and it's clear in Denver, although we would never advise using them on a road. But as you're climbing up the mountains, you're climbing up the Front Range, all of a sudden it starts snowing. You get a little bit of snow in the air and you start, you know, reducing your visibility. All right, go to that warm white because it doesn't reflect back as much. Your eye doesn't perceive the light reflecting off of the snow in the air. Well, now you get into a blizzard, just go full amber. And now that's going to reflect even less because it's a narrower wavelength. Mm-hmm. So white is a real broad wavelength. That the broader the wavelength, the more you're going to reflect off of whatever color that, you know, reflected. If you can go with a narrow wavelength amber, now you get to project light more and it doesn't reflect back. And your eye perceives it as a brighter light, as a more useful light, because every light is just, it's the interaction between what your eye perceives and how far the light is going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the light doesn't need to be there for itself. It all has to do with what you're using it for with your eyes.
It's the relationship between the projected energy and what your eye is perceiving. Mm-hmm. So it's just, then that's what you do when you lower that color temperature with the amber. You go from a cool white, which is very reflective, it reflects everything because it's a broad spectrum light, down to a lower intensity, very, very narrow spectrum light. You can project light through whatever's in the air, dust, fog, snow. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing. Let's say you're out racing, you know, you're racing around the desert, you're a king of the hammers, and you know, all of a sudden you come into a bunch of dust. If you could just flip a switch and your lights go to amber until you get out of the dust, then you go back to white, you're going to see better.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah, I didn't realize you had that. That's a great idea. The only other thing that I personally have thought that would be nice to have is adjustable for the direction, where you could literally either move the light digitally or physically, so that you could, not initially a spotlight, but you know what I mean, where you could actually do adjustments, maybe get more to the side. I mean, you have flood, I know, but sometimes you need light really to the sides. And if you could change the light.
We actually have an issue patent on a lot of that technology, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's complicated, and is it going to be, I don't know. It doesn't get me all that excited about it.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Have you been in a situation where you thought it would be nice to be able to angle those lights? I mean, headlights, they're doing this with headlights and stuff for turns and whatnot.
I think done well, I think it could be useful. Off-road is such a dynamic environment. I don't know. I think what would be really cool, and this is, you know, what we filed it for, is vertical stability. But do it optically. Aviation was my background for years. So if you think about the gun mount on an Apache helicopter, how it's tied to...
Oh, yeah. Now we're talking.
And it follows the guy's eye.
Yeah.
But then it's also... Or even think about the turret on a tank. When that tank is bouncing through, the turret just dead steady.
Exactly.
You know, and the tank's doing this.
Oh, this is great. This is great stuff, man. You and I are one-on-one here. This is so cool. Head-mounted stuff. It's really neat. Well, you know, they have the IR tracker. I don't know if you ever played any online games and flying games.
Yeah.
The IR tracker. My son bought that. And, you know, you put the little thing on your head, on your hat, and then you could actually, you know, look around while you're playing the game. And I thought this would be so cool to have in the Jeep. And you could probably retrofit it. I don't think IR tracker's involved. They're in business anymore. But it was a cool technology, you know, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah. And that's honestly, I mean, I think that's where technology will go. But I think from a real world application standpoint, we're probably 5 years out from anything like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we did file the IP on it, but it's the same thing. I want a bank of optics, whereas you're doing this, essentially optics that it keeps the light, you know, your light
stabilized.
This,
yeah.
But it appears to be dead straight. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, someday we'll get there.
Okay. I have a Jeep Talk Show million dollar idea for you. What you need to work on, and you may already have thought about this. What you need is a chase drone with a huge bank of lights that just follows you and gives you light all the way around your vehicle. So anywhere you look, you got good light.
You know, we've talked about that, but the amount of energy storage is still going to be the issue.
It's the same problem with EVs. You know, if we could have some sort of good battery technology, or better yet, something that creates voltage on its own, then we could do a lot of things.
Exactly. It's that difference between, you know, your early adopters versus your innovators versus your mainstream application. You know, at the end of the day, it is still a business. So, you know, we can't just do all early adoption stuff. You know, and batteries, it's just like EVs, you know, electric vehicles are getting there for some very, very specific uses. But, you know, a buddy of mine just got the first Cybertruck in Arizona.
Neat.
First thing he does is hooks up his 28-foot ski boat and takes it out and then does the math. He's like, I don't think I can make Havasu. I think I've only got 100-mile range. Like, all right, well, I think we found a limitation of, you know, the newest and greatest EV on the market.
So he didn't order the one with the extended range package that takes up part of the truck?
No, because he wanted the first one. So he took basically the base model with the base battery and everything. But it's still 350 miles.
Yeah.
But EVs are getting great. I mean, I got a Rivian. I pre-ordered a Rivian, and I really, really like it. I mean, it has been a great vehicle. But I wouldn't hook something up. And, you know, anytime I drive it outside of town, man, I get what is it, range anxiety?
Range anxiety.
The official term for it.
Yeah. And they beat you up. People will beat you up online about range anxiety, telling you shouldn't do that. It's like, what do you mean? I got to worry about, you know, getting there. And if it's not charged and not running, I'm going to be stuck. It's not like I can get somebody to bring me a gallon of gas to get to the station.
Yeah. And you get out on the highway at the hill, you know, there's everything in Arizona has a hill on it. All of a sudden you're goes from 300 miles to 200 miles. You're like, huh.
Mm-hmm. It's really neat. So, I saw recently a Cybertruck decked out on the tracks. You know how they'll put the tracks on?
And then
all these lights. They got lights on the roof. They got a bunch of lights on the front. And I'm thinking, okay, this is all running off the batteries that make the vehicle go. So this is just a gimmick. It's not anything, you know, that you could actually use.
100%. I put a couple on mine, which I ended up pulling off and sending it back because the engineers at Rivian actually wanted to see it. So,
it's a cool technology. Yeah, it's a cool technology, and we'll be there. But it's the energy density. We just don't have the energy density yet.
I would love to have a drone follow me around.
Wouldn't that be cool? Even just for marketing footage would be cool. Yeah, and then you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, it's not night wheeling anymore. Now it's daytime wheeling. You've got an artificial sun.
Exactly. So now you've done King of the Hammers, and obviously you need good lighting at night on King of the Hammers. And I don't think anybody worries about blinding competitors on King of the Hammers, right? I mean, you need the best lights that you can get, and I would think pretty much everywhere.
Yep, exactly. And I raced Bush League, I raced minor league, so I raced the EMC just for something fun to do.
Sure.
This year I raced, actually my kid was my co-driver, which was one of the most fun I've had in a car in you know, we were having a great day until I had a helmet fire and rolled right outside of pits. So
no, wait a minute. Helmet fire? What the hell you mean? Did your helmet catch on fire?
No, my brake quit working.
Okay.
Yeah, you've never.
No, I've never heard that before. That's cool.
The term for I ran out of talent. The talent tank ran low. You pick it. I failed.
Is there any thinking whenever it's just balls to the walls?
Well, that's exactly it. Is it, you know, I had a fire inside my helmet. It quit functioning.
I thought your head was on fire. Good Lord.
We got a lot of live stream time upside down, me standing next to my kid waving at the helicopter. But, you know, that's what it is. I mean, I don't go in expecting to win. I go in expecting to have fun and put a good show on and support my sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and that's what it is. You know, I need to know what's going on out there, and there's no better way to do that. You know, than, you know, you like how I justify it? I need to know what it's like.
It's market research.
100%. At least that's what I try and convince my wife.
Right. But honey, I got a company. It's a living. It's part of what we have to do. So the child that went with you, male, female, how old?
17-year-old son.
Oh God.
Yeah.
I bet you that. Does he have more respect for dad now?
I don't know. I mean, I have a great relationship with both my kids, so I don't have anything, you know. But he's still a 17-year-old boy.
And, yeah,
you know, it's yeah.
I got two boys; they're great. And at that age,
first time in a race car, and he did good. It was funny. By you know, never co-drove, never been in a race car. And, you know, it was funny. By the end of the day, you know, he's telling me to like stay in it. You know, sweeper left coming up, like
oh, nice.
Yeah. So. It was a blast. I think I'll definitely get him back in a race car. So
assuming this is true, how was he on his first time wearing Depends?
we went back and forth with that. I tried to tell him he had to wear a race catheter, which.
That was going to be my next question. Good Lord. That doesn't go in there. I can promise you.
If any the Jeep Talk Show people have never heard of a race catheter, it is quite possibly the most uncomfortable thing removed.
But it's an encouragement for you to race and get to the end so you can take it out.
Yeah, and it is a condom with glue in it. And that's the easiest way to describe it. So it's fine until you gotta take one. And we'll just leave it at that. Now, I figured this year we were going to have some fun. And we just, you know, if I got to pee, I'm getting out of the car. So.
Oh, thank God. Yeah, that would turn me off right there. Yeah, I've interviewed Tony Pellegrino a couple of times. And I think the first time I talked to him, that's all we talked about. All the little details about everything you have to do for the vehicle, the dual redundancy. And then I think it came up with like, well, wait a minute, you got to go to the bathroom on this thing. How do you handle that? And he was talking about catheters and stuff. I was like, oh my God, this is murder.
And it is. And nobody talks about it. And I remember the first like, what do I do? I got a feel. Like, well, you go get a race cat. I'm like, what? And like, it's kind of like you're back in high school and you don't want to ask the weird questions.
Right.
How to use it. They just kind of, you just kind of get one and like just read the instructions. Like,
well, it's a catheter. You actually don't have to use it, do you? It just drains automatically, I would think.
It is. And I will tell you, it's really funny because, yeah, you get out, you know, then you got to get out and you're not going to take it off if you're getting back in the car. And just standing next to your buddies, you're like, hey, man, peeing on your foot. And it just drains out your leg.
Oh, and you know, I think that's one of the most interesting things. I mean, it's kind of nasty, kind of gross, but I think that these little things, people romanticize racing, but there's a lot of work and there's discomfort and there's, I mean, you have to be really strapped in tight, in that vehicle, cause there's, I mean, your head, everything. So I would imagine you don't do a lot of looking around, with your head movement because is it tied down?
Yeah, you have the Hans on, so you've got, I don't know, maybe 20 degrees of movement.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go forward, you know, and that's the whole thing is to prevent the nail earn heartbreak where it just snaps your upper vertebrae. So
right.
you know, that, but they've also made it so safe. So that's why, you know, I'm comfortable with my kid in the car because, you know, you got to replace your belts every 2 years, your seats, your helmets, everything.
Wow.
It really is a very safe sport because of all the safety that goes into it. But there is a lot. I mean, and that's the thing is to get in and out, you know, you got to get everything down, cinched down, and tightened up.
Do you have to have a team that is out there with you and taking care of the things that have to be taken care of?
Pretty much do. And that's honestly how I got into it. Is I became friends with the guys at, you know, Andrew McLaughlin over at Let's Roll. And, you know, he kind of got me into racing after Rigid. And that was, I went to everything, you know, went to Hammers, went to the Thousand, went to all this stuff. But as a vendor, you know, working with Rigid. Mm. And then once I got out of it, I'm like, I should try racing. And then you get into it, you're like, I like it. I mean, there's not much the adrenaline rush of pulling up to a start line in full safety gear is pretty hard to replace. Mm-hmm. And, you know, knowing what this day is, you know, knowing what it is, but not knowing what the race is going to be like and, you know, passing people. And,
well, this isn't like an oval track that's paved and has all the nice rubber laid down on it, because you have no idea. I mean, I'm sure you go through the track or the area to get an idea, but still, there's so many variables. I can imagine it's very interesting.
You pre-run it, but when you pre-run it, you don't know what's going to happen with anything. I mean, even pre-running's an adventure. We were out pre-running, and we were on a pretty easy spot, and one of the girls in our group that wheels herself, she broke, you know, snipped broken axle shaft on a trail. What was it? Like, I don't know, Highway 20, I think is what they called it. And we're just sitting there, you know, honestly, just waiting for her to, you know, somebody was already helping her. And all of a sudden, here comes another racer pre-running, and they hit a bump and just flip over and almost roll off the mountain into the wash.
Good
like,
God.
What just happened? Like, we're out here on, like, you know, we're out here drinking a beer, sitting, waiting, you know, taking a break. And all of a sudden, there's a car on its lid and about to roll off a 20-foot ledge into a wash. We're like, oh, we got to go. Drive up. I mean, it was a multiple vehicle winch to get them back up. And I talked to him after the fact, and he had some interference where the sway bar would actually catch and then release. And he thinks it released and kind of launched him off of this slightly off camera. I mean, wow, we had all just driven, didn't even think anything of it. And all of a sudden there's this, and that's the thing is you've got equipment, you've got environment, you've got competitors, you've got, you know, changing rocks rolling down trails. Every time you drive through a trail, it's going to be different.
Sure.
And that's what I think I like about the rock racing is the variability of it.
Mm. So, what have you learned, racing about your lights? I would imagine vibration, the mounts, how they create crushed, maybe, depending on the situation.
I mean, I can send you all kinds of pictures of lights smashed on the side of canyons and walls and everything else. But the biggest thing is one size doesn't fit all. You can't have, you know, everybody puts, you know, spot beams and thinks spot beams. But if you get out in the canyon or you get out in the forest, the worst thing you can have is that spot beam because that's all you can see. And now you miss those subtle clues that you said you get with the amber. Mm-hmm. You miss all those subtle clues and the subtle, you know, nuances of the trail because of the fact that you're only looking at one spot.
Right.
So that's where it is really, really driven home the fact that, you know, a multiple beam light is what we need.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what everybody should be running. And like I said, you know, there's Rigid World, which everything we did was spot flood combos, you know, but it was always just a fixed beam light and a bi-light. Now then I start racing, like, man, it'd be really cool if this light could do this. But then when we get back into it, we're like, all right, we're gonna do this. Now I'm gonna go race with it. And I'm confirmed to the fact that, you know, when you are in that high stress environment where helmet fires happen.
I've never heard that. That's great.
You need to be able to really fine-tune what you can see to your environment. And mm-hmm. your environment can
absolutely.
I mean, blasting across a lake bed in Mexico or climbing up a canyon in the rocks or going, you know, let's say you're in Colorado, you're above timberline and something happened and now it's nighttime and you're coming off Engineer Pass in Silverton and you need to see something different. And, you know, the same vehicles we use for everything. Mm-hmm. And we'll go camp in Mexico one weekend, and the next weekend we're up in Colorado at 13,000 feet. So it's, you know, I want to put one set of lights on, and I want to do everything. Mm-hmm.
This strikes me that this is one of the reasons why we put Atlas transfer case in our rig, because now we have more control. This is why some people like standard transmissions, because they have more control. Having that ability to know your vehicle and address the situation you're in is, I think, critical. And I think people don't consider that. And it's just a light. It needs to be bright, and it needs to, you know, point in one direction. So this makes a lot of sense. You're making it where you can modify it to the situation, which is, I'd never thought about it before, but it's really the way to go. It needs to be modifiable. It doesn't mean you're going to use it correctly, but you have the option to use it correctly.
Exactly. And, you know, 15 years later from, you know, going all in and lighting, you know, this is what I've learned, you know, learned mm-hmm. using stuff. You know, I'm very, very lucky that I get to go use stuff before anybody else gets to see it. And it's, you know, like, oh, well, that works or that doesn't work. Or, you know, somebody might like that. Okay, let's go. You know, maybe it's not the perfect light for me, but it'll be a good light for somebody else. And, you know, that's the magic. You know, that's where I get to do this stuff every day as a career. And it's awesome.
Yeah, that's really cool. I do this when I find something that's just very interesting to me and somebody that can talk about it so well like you do. I can see from the smile on your face and the passion that you talk about this stuff that you really enjoy doing this. And I think it's very important when you're considering purchasing a product to purchase it from somebody that has that kind of passion. So, I apologize because I get interested in all the details of things, and I think the audience likes that too, but we haven't really talked about your lights. can you give me a rundown on what you guys have available? I mean, we've kind of talked about that as far as the adjustable wide beam, narrow, and adjusting the color on it and the stuff. Is there a recommended light that people should look at first for their first nacho light?
It depends what you're doing. I mean, we've got two products right now, the TM5 and then the Quattro. And again, we are not a Chinese lighting company. We don't just buy it, you know. We don't have a full size offering because everything we do takes time. We tool it ourselves. We design it ourselves. All the electronics are done in Arizona.
So, nice.
With that said, we try and make the two size offerings we have as versatile as versatile as possible. We are coming out with a 7-inch light. I don't know. Yeah, when this gets published, but in April,
mid March, I think is when this will be out.
Oh, so you know, well, you're going to start seeing the new light by then. So we've also got let's edit that little section out. So
well, let's take a pause. So I'll know to edit it.
So and now, in, you know, we're mid-March, so your listeners have probably seen there's a new light coming out, the Grande, and that's going to be kind of an evolution of everything. The Quattro is going to be your 4-inch, and the Quattro, we really started, I've got one right here. This is just the light engine, though. We started with this. This is the light engine, and we wanted this to go in fog light. Every fog light you've seen, in a round fog light in a Jeep, Toyota, and Bronco has this size light. Now, what we did is we took this and then we designed a housing around it. So now we've got this cool exoskeleton that goes around the light. So this is the light, even though it was designed from the start to be the light engine that goes in fog light. Mm-hmm. And this is a 60-watt light. We've got, you know, top of the industry optics. We've got a difference between, you know, you've got an SAE. But what's cool about this is the bottom half is an SAE legal fog light, and the top half is a spotlight. So you can put this in your fog cavity, and you've got a spotlight and a replacement fog light you can use on the road. Or you don't use the fog light on the bottom. You just go with a combo beam on the bottom. So now you've got a 10 by 40 degree beam that's really a beautiful drive beam and a spotlight all built into the same and you can mount it in your fog light location in your factory bumpers or aftermarket bumpers. You don't have to find a new mounting location. Now, in this housing, we've also got a flood. So if you want, you know, I call it the tweaker light. Optically, when the fog comes out, it actually aims down about 5 degrees. So you put that on the top, now you've got it, it goes up 5 degrees. So if you mount this on the side of your, you know, you're living the van life, you mount this on the side of your Sprinter van out in the forest, the low beam can be your camp light. And then once you hear things that go bump in the night, you can flip the switch, and now you're going to light up out in the forest, and you can see the tweakers coming out of the forest to come steal all your stuff.
That's cool.
So it's just little stuff like that. You know, we're just trying to do stuff different. The other light we've got is the TM5. The TM5 is going to, it's not going anywhere. It's going to kind of be your value proposition. It's $500 a pair. It has a high beam combo, a low beam light, with the high beam still 200,000 candela. So it's still out, just the high beam portion alone outperforms everything on the market. And then you flip another switch and you've got a full power floodlight that's 150 degrees wide. So what's funny is the TM5 was the first light we came out with, and we called it the TM because it's 5 inches and we wanted it to be a taste of the magic. So that's what the T stands, the TM stands for, because we knew we were going to go to other stuff. So that's kind of, you know, that's the offering. We've got the amber whites. We've got the, like we said, the street legal fog lights, but everything's American made. Everything's got a lifetime warranty, and we've been doing it, you know, So we're not a startup. We have a limited offering because it takes a lot to develop US made stuff, but it's also very durable and
I like the U.S. made thing. I usually try to ask before I start the interview if it's U.S. made, because I hate to ask somebody, is it U.S. made? And they go, no. So I appreciate you mentioning that.
And, you know, there's always going to be, it's faster to market. We keep more control of it. I mean, there's so many advantages, and it's more expensive.
Mm-hmm. You know,
absolutely. I can't compete with the Chinese junk that's selling on Amazon, but there's a lot of people that don't want that Chinese junk, and that's the market we're trying to cater to.
So I like the idea of having a legal light. Half of it's legal, and you didn't say this, I'm going to say it, the other half is illegal.
Right.
So there's that situation, which I personally would never do. Whenever somebody hits you with high beams and you're already on low beams, you can always say, oh, but wait, there's more.
Yeah. And, you know, we talk about the usefulness of the low beam, even if it's an illegal low beam, you know, but the low beam in a light, maybe not a street legal. But we did want to do something that was truly street legal.
That's great.
You know, there's optical baffles, and there's, you know, we have to use a specific LED and honestly turn the power down. So you could take the same beam and get rid of all the restrictions, you know, essentially take the restrictor plate out, and it's awesome. So a lot of people do that, and you still have this low beam that isn't street legal per se, and we would never advise it, and I would tell you, you know, don't do it, but you're driving on a county road, you're driving out somewhere, you know, where there's nobody coming, you want to turn some lights on that might not be really street legal.
Well, I was just going to say earlier, you would say you guys don't recommend this, and I understand, but you as pilot in command need to make the determination, is it worth risking your rig, your life, or whatever? You've got the means to see what you need to see. You're not blinding somebody else. So, yeah, I'm going to do what's technically illegal, but it's safe for me and my family.
Yeah, and the nice thing is you've still got to take other people into account, you know. So you've got the low beam, so you can turn it on, and it's going to be brighter than the high beams in your truck. But if, you know, somebody comes around a corner and you can't get them shut off quick enough, you're not blinding them with 8 million candela.
Right.
You're blinding them with, you know, maybe 50% more than your high beams. You're in a safe situation. You're not creating a danger for anybody else coming, but it's not legal by letter of the law. So
right.
Of course, from a, you know, don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that. Well, it's all about personal responsibility, and people need to take it and make their own determinations about what's best for them.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately,
yeah.
I mean, we're Americans, damn it. This is really cool, and I just want to mention really quick that you guys have some nice bright yellow covers that say Nacho on them. Now, I'm sure you guys have thought about this, but I would like to see a little bucket, little plate of nachos underneath that name.
No, we got we just released. We have a mascot, Mo Nacho.
Absolutely.
I don't have any stickers around here with Mo. Maybe I'll send you a logo. You can flash Mo up on the screen. But we've got Mo. We've got our mascot. And early on, we were doing, and we still do, nacho reviews. I'm sure everybody, a lot of people follow Barstool Sports.
Yeah.
Dave Portnoy with his pizza reviews. So we try to do the same thing with nacho reviews. And there's probably a dozen of them on our Instagram page.
Oh, I'll have to look at that. Yeah.
So, you know, and we always, you know, we're always looking for guest nacho reviewers. So next time you
love nacho recommendations. Oh, you got to try such and such.
I love them. People always say, what's the best nachos you've ever had? And I think it's hard to say. I think I've narrowed it down to three places. And I don't even know if they're still there. Back when I was flying, there was a place right off the west end of the runway in San Diego. We used to overnight there. It was just amazing. I mean, I swear they put 3 pounds of cheese on just a pile of chips. And then there's a place in Isla Mujeres off Cancun, and then there's a place in Durango, Colorado. So those are my top three nachos right now. And then, I mean, my go-to nachos, there's a local place in Phoenix, Nando's. And, man, it's, you can't beat them. I mean, I had a dinner last night.
Oh, nice. So, again, you go to Nachos, Nacho Offroading Technology.com, and you can see the lights there. But,
Nacho.love is the website.
Perfect.
You know,
yeah, perfect. That's
not love is the suffix. So, yeah, Nacho.love. And that'll take you wherever, because everybody loves nachos.
Yeah, absolutely. That's nice and short too. So obviously you can go to nachos.love to see the lights here that we've been talking about. Now we talked about you're going to EJS. Are you going to be there as a vendor, or are you going to have something set up so if people are at EJS 2024, they can see these lights in person?
Both. We'll be there wheeling, and then we'll also have, we support dealers. So we'll have a couple dealers. We'll have a couple of dealers that are going to be supporting, that we're going to support. Let's Roll Off-Road, Texas Truck Works. There'll be a few, so I'll kind of bounce around different. But, you know, I love talking to people. You know, when people come in and say, hey, here's a light I need. All right, cool, it'll do this. And every once in a while, somebody will come in and say, hey, I want a light that does this. You know, we don't have a light for that. And then that, you know, I put that in the back of my mind, like, all right, well, when we design the next light, when we do the Grande, It's going to be I'm going to make sure and integrate. I want a light to do everything.
So you could, what you're saying is this could be Bob's light. Bob doesn't get credit or any kind of residuals, but this could be Bob's light, the next one that you're coming out with. So you like hearing feedback from people.
I love talking to customers, and it's hard, you know, EJS Trail Hero, going to races is where you really get to talk to people who use it. You know, SEMA is a business to business thing. Mm-hmm. You know, but I love getting out
of trail runs.
The best, I still am a firm believer in the best business takes place around a campfire.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I'm lucky that I get to do a lot of the industry runs. You know, we do a lot of work with UConn. UConn makes amazing products. And they do, you know, they do an adventure trek every year. And same thing with Let's Roll. Let's Roll does an adventure, you know, kind of series where you get industry people and customers, and you know, you're passing the whiskey bottle around the fire, and that's where the best ideas and the best, you know, the best camaraderie can come from, both from a business standpoint, a product standpoint, you name it.
Have you thought about making a flashlight out of one of your lights? Not something that you sell, but just something you could be around the fire, and you can shine the light in their face and go, what the hell is that? So it's a light I made.
Well, I mean, flashlights are always on the list. If you look at, you know, flashlights are just as fun as vehicle lights.
Yeah.
And the flashlight market's a big, big market.
No, know, but I'm like just talking about one of your off-road lights and putting the battery pack on it.
Just put a handle on this and now it's
Maybe a battery pack, you know, belt pack, and you run the wire up. It's kind of like the catheter thing, but in reverse. So I would assume that your vendors, if anybody's looking, they want to see the lights in person, that any of the vendors that you, the multiple vendors that you have, they can see them at probably all the big events around the country. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we're at most, I mean, all the big events, Smoky Mountain GP, you know, we've got More Expo, you know, that's a big Midwest kind of overland show, you know, we'll have people there. So yeah, you look at our show schedule, I mean, there's probably 25 shows that we go to.
Wow.
And then probably double that, you know, local weekend shows around here. I mean, we're Arizona based, so we always support the local guys.
Mm-hmm. So you know how the kids love the social media these days. Are you guys on social media? And if so, where?
Oh, absolutely. Facebook, Instagram. I think we have a TikTok station. I'm not real down with the TikToks quite yet. I guess
call it TikTok. I mean, if you've got gray hair, yeah, it's best to call it TikTok. So the kids go, oh, you're old.
Yeah, the TikTok and the Snappy Chat.
So, what is it? Is it Nacho or Nacho Love or whatever?
I think it's if you search Nacho, it'll come up. I believe it's the Nacho Experience. I think it's at the Nacho Experience.
Gotcha.
And you'll see that as, you know, it's an experience. We try and make it, you know, the whole user experience, from the unboxing to the wiring to the integration. And, you know, the company's name is actually Nacho Off-Road Technology. And we, you know, down the road, we're not pigeonholing us into an off-road lighting. You know, who knows? There's something that comes up because they're like, hey, I got this idea for a, I don't know what, but it might not be lighting. But, you know, we might venture out of the lighting vertical.
Yeah, men and women do not live by bright lights alone, but boy, it's sure nice, isn't that a good place to start? So Nacho, yeah. offroadtechnology.com. Steve, I really appreciate you being here. Fun conversation. Thank you for going down those rabbit holes. I love those rabbit holes. It's great information to have. And now I know more about the yellow light versus the pure white lights.
Yep. And if you want both, we can make both.
That's cool.
You shouldn't be stuck in one or the other. But if you like the look, all our lights come with amber covers anyway, so you can make it amber out of the box.
Mm-hmm. I like Scotty from Star Trek because Scotty always had a bypass. He could always make a modification to do what he needed to do. And that's the same type of thing we're talking about here, making modifications built in so that you can use it the best way you can. You never know what situation you're going to be in. So, Steve, thank you so much for being with us today. And we'll have to have you back because I know we've only scratched the surface.
Yep, I would love to. It's fun talking about this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like me when I'm telling my wife about space or off-road or anything. It's like she just has to listen. But it's fun to talk about. Yeah. All right, have a good day. Thank you very much.
You bet. Thanks for the time.
Hey, thanks again to Steve Adams of Nacho Love. Visit their website right now, nacho.love. Yes, you use the .love just like you would use the .com. You guys may be used to it. It kind of freaks me out. That's nacho.love. Check them out right now. On episode 149 of the Jeep Talk Show, we interviewed a Jeep Cherokee owner named Kyle.
So we're driving around there looking for a parking space, and we just see him parked there, and I was like, are you serious?
The diagonally parked Corvette owner, just feet from the restaurant's entrance, took up two parking places.
I see what Jeep owner probably would have done. I mean, I was just like, okay, screw it. I'm just going to park on the curb.
This story was covered well in the news, but there was more to the story.
Well, I mean, I never told any reporter this. I was driving, he comes in the opposite direction.
You don't know what you've missed unless you go back and listen. We should reach out to Kyle and see if we can get him on, see if there was any updates to that. I don't think so, but it was really amazing what happened several years ago. National news. I mean, and you never know what they're going to pick up, what they're going to talk about. But it was really cool, and it was really cool that we were able to get him on the show. It was fun talking to him. Hey, coming up next week, Josh Jamison of Black Fork Tools. This is the guy that we talked about many episodes back, where it's kind of a rubberized plastic plug that you can plug your frame so it keeps debris and water and stuff out of there. But it still allows the frame to breathe, but it also allows you to, you know, keep the salt out of it for you folks up there in the salt belt. All right, so are you in the Houston area? Come join us at Katy Crossroads Ice House in beautiful downtown Katy. We call it Old Katy. This Sunday, 1 p.m. to 4 p.m., meet me, Greg from Underground Graphics, and Todd from offroading101.com. And that's undergroundgraphics.com. Greg's going to say, why didn't you say my website on there? It's a great way to talk to somebody about graphics for your Jeep or how to learn the how to wheel your Jeep. Again, that's this Sunday, March 10th, 1 p.m. to 4 p.m., Katy, Texas, Katy Crossroads Ice House. It's a beautiful area right there in old Katy, and really not very far off of I-10, maybe 2 miles off of I-10. If you're familiar with I forgot the name of the mall. There's a mall right there. I was going to call it Holly Oaks, but that's not right. Anyway, there's a mall right there that you're probably aware of. It's called, Katy Mills. It's probably called Katy something. Katy Mills Mall. And it shows you how long I've been over there or how long it's been since I was over there. Anyway, it's just south of Katy Mills Mall, maybe 2-3 miles. Anyway, it's real easy to find. Just do a search for Katy Crossroads Icehouse.com. All right, so the Jeep Talk Show is going to Moab, Utah. This is for Easter Jeep Safari 2024. Several Jeep Talk Show team members and listeners will be joining up for another great time in Moab. Come be a part of it. Join our Discord server for up-to-date information and ask questions. Just go to jeeptalkshow.com/contact to find out how to join our Discord server. You're going to enjoy it for more than just that. It's part of our Jeep Talk Show community, the Jeep Talk Show family. No, it's not a club, damn it. All right, so please consider becoming a Patreon subscriber. We put a lot of time and effort into this show. This is the guilt part. I appreciate you listening. We all do, all the team. But you can go one step further and become a paid subscriber. It only takes $5 to get started, and you can cancel anytime. We're told it's worth the subscription for the discounts alone. Give it a try. What do you have to lose, and what are you missing in gains? And that's a wrap for today's episode of the Jeep Talk Show. I want to give a big thank you to our special guests for joining us today and sharing their knowledge and experience with the Jeep community. Thanks again to G-Tops for sponsoring this episode of the Jeep Talk Show. Find out more by going to gtops.com. Supporting the companies that support the show you love, the Jeep Talk Show, is the right thing to do. Meet me and the 2021 Jeep Talk Show Gladiator at EGS 2024, and you can see the G-Tops in person. And these G-Tops are special. They got a bullet hole in them. No, it wasn't something that happened to me. It happened while these G-Tops were being shipped to a customer. And, of course, they're not going to make a customer have G-Tops with holes in them. Fortunately, it wasn't the clear panel that got shot. I suspect that it wouldn't have done anything to it except maybe fracture it because they're really tough. Anyway, come see them in person. I think you'll really enjoy seeing these things. I'm very impressed with them. And big thanks to G-Tops, Chris at G-Tops, for letting us borrow these tops to take to Easter Jeep Safari. Hey, we love hearing from you, listener. Reach out to us via email, phone, and social media. Did you know we actually use your voicemails on the show? So until next time, keep on jeeping, and we'll see you on the trails. Oh, and remember, Fridays are red. Remember, everyone deployed.
Broadcasting since 2010.